Red Cow Arcade.
I have water and ice in my fridge now.
Oh, yeah. I heard.
It's an exciting thing. It's a the kid really loves it. I think it's a huge novelty for a child to be like,
Yeah, I remember my aunt and uncle had a fridge with a ice maker, and I remember as a kid being enthralled by it, because we had ice cube trays, like peons and all that stuff forever. They probably still do. I think they still have ice cube trays.
Tell you what, I don't think the cost between the expense of the fridge, the expense of the plumbing, it's that water is never going to pay for itself.
No,
it's just the convenience and the, it's a status marker, I suppose.
Yeah. No, but you do have the wonder, glorious wonder.
Yeah.
And appreciation for at least like a week.
Do you have, is your freezer, you know, on the bottom, the top, or on the side?
Mine's on the bottom, so it's a bottom one, it's the bottom top situation. We have an ice maker, but no water.
Yeah, when I lived at Nina's dad's house when we were younger, he had an ice maker that would dump into like a big tub, and then you could like scoop a plastic cup through it, and that was, you know, but he had kind of shitty water because everywhere around here is like well water, and if you don't treat your water, it can be kind of, you know, it mostly around here it will taste like iron if it's like an old well.
No, ours has a lot of calcium in it. It's not well water. It's treated somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's very chlorinated. So we filter all our water. We have a huge, like, it's like a Berkey filter. You put it on your counter. So we filter it and drink nice, fresh filtered water.
It does. It's kind of like, yeah, it encourages water consumption, which is, as opposed to like
because if you don't filter it, it's like you're drinking pool water, water from a swimming pool.
I often shock people, like, because most people have street water, street gas, or city water, I should say. And, you know, we have like a water closet that goes to the well, and we have a softener and we have a filter. And with the softener, you actually have, we buy two giant heavy bags of salt every month, and we dump salt into this thing. It is kind of prepper out here, EJ, like with the garden and the private well. And now there's the gas. So, you know, we don't have the oil burner anymore. So that's all done. Last time I spoke on the podcast, it was going to get done. Now it is done. And, so it's propane deliveries, as I mentioned last time. And, I'm really impressed by how it all went down, because you would think like changing out heating systems in your home would be this very disruptive thing. And it really only was for like 2 days, and working from home is genius because it means you can just let people in. They can just do their shit, and you can, you don't have to take a day off from work or anything like that. But
oh yeah,
it did mean that, that there were 2 days of cold showers or of no hot water. Cause the mini splits can heat the house if you want them to. And there's only like one chilly day where that was even necessary. But I had it in my head. Call me naive. I am kind of, you know, for a smart person, I'm kind of stupid. It's something I've noticed over time.
I feel that too. You know, there's that, because I was just doing my taxes. Yeah. And you know that scene in Breaking Bad where Skyler pretends to be a bimbo and she's like, well, I filled in the Quicken and I just kept like clicking until it didn't flash red and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's me with my taxes every year. It's not even a persona. I'm just the bimbo who's just filling in like all the things and nothing flashes red. And I just hope the government doesn't arrest me.
That reminds me of off topic that in one of the Arcade 1UP Facebook groups, somebody posted, you know, I don't know what age. It was a very boomerish sentiment. Excuse me. So maybe an older person, but possibly not. And they were like, I don't get it, guys. Why do you buy an Arcade 1UP just to, you know, basically just for the wood, if you're going to then like mod it, you know, completely, you're buying it twice, you know, why not just be a carpenter and cut your own wood and build your own cabinet? It's so much cheaper and easier. Help me understand. He ended it with help me understand, which is a very smug sentiment. Cause he's obviously just signaling that he's a carpenter or that he's capable of carpentry. He's like, it's easy. Carpentry is easy. And it had like 100 comments. I mean, everybody took the bait on this thing. And they all, everybody said the same thing, which was like, I have money, but not carpentry skills. I have money, but not time. I know tech, but I don't know carpentry. A lot of, hey, let's see yours. Cause like, I bet it looks kind of like, you know, like very plain. And one of the things he was touting was like, oh, you can make it huge. And everybody was like, well, I really like what Arcade 1UP has kind of spec'd for their size.
Yeah.
And kind of what they've figured out with it.
It is perfect. Like, I do like the size.
Yeah.
Even like, I'll see some people have the Legends whatever one, but it seems too big. Yeah. It's like just too big.
I'm with you. Even playing an original full size cabinet, it feels goofy. It's like, this is way too humongous for basic video. I mean, I'm not playing at Fun Spot, for instance, they had Afterburner. I thought this was hilarious. It was the original Afterburner. It was a giant gyroscopic thing you could sit in, and it would, you know, but it's just like a Sega game, like a shitty Sega game, but
yeah.
Trying to give you that full body experience. And then a lot of people made the very good point of like, I don't buy brand new ones. I buy broken ones. I buy ones that have broken PCBs or, you know, especially in the middle of the country, I think people buy, they can find them on, you know, at Ollie's, or they can find them on Craigslist or whatever for like $100. People that just want to get rid of them. And they're like, those are the ones to mod. And that, if you were like, my whole thing is I want to mod tons of cabs in a big game room because I'm in the middle of the country and I have lots of real estate or something.
Yeah, real estate. And
that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, no, it's true. I see them on Facebook Marketplace sometimes, and there's some that are reasonable prices. Some that, like, I don't know, maybe they see the eBay prices and they think they can do that, but you can't. Yeah. You can't when you're picking up local.
I still maintain, like, if I had
$900, it's like, no, it's not.
No, fuck that. I maintain that if I had a gigantic, if I, you know, I Metal Jesus, the guy that you refuse to watch.
I can't.
Sacrilegious.
It's like. Like a couple frames start of his videos, and I have to click off. I don't know why.
You're like, no way.
I'm sure he's perfectly fine.
Yeah, in fact, that's how I would describe him. Perfectly fine. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. There's something about middle-of-the-road YouTube gaming content that Sega Lord X is very...
I don't know what the difference is. Maybe there's, like, Sega Lord X usually isn't on camera, so I just see game footage. Maybe that's...
But he just recently did another one of these, you know, game room thing. But it's not really a game room tour. It's a game floor tour. And he's in Seattle, too. So he must be loaded.
Wow.
You can't. Yeah. He's not in North Carolina. But he's got 1,000 square feet in his upstairs of just nothing but gaming. And but I actually really like the way that he's laid everything out. His philosophy is like to make everything accessible and pick up and play, and that it would, and that there would be enough like space for people to walk through it and to sit and to eat. And like, here's a couch, here's some like arcade kiosk, here's like a bar area. These are like handhelds just for display. Over down the hall is like the, like some Windows XP PCs with like some like preloaded games. And like, so he, you know, kind of tries his best to make it so that like people could actually enjoy the space. When I see like other people's game rooms and it's just like wall to wall, like every single Arcade 1UP cabinet, I'm like, couldn't you just mod one and be pretty happy with that? Like, I would much rather go with variety. I don't even like pinball, but I at least be like, all right, put a pinball machine in there, just have a pool table, you know, have a
because
area.
Somebody would be interested if you like had somebody over. They'd be like, oh, pinball, yeah.
I wish I had more guests. I just don't. So really, it's for me and my kid mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. I have enough. Yeah. It was fun, the one party I had last year.
Oh, that was been nice. When you and Zach came over and like played through Simpsons, that was fun. That was like, yeah. That's what it would be like if like I had like adult friends that came over my house.
we weren't like just making content all the time.
As a matter of fact, Keith Sadek and I, you know, before I had kids, before he had a family, he's with his nephews all the time. We used to hang out like throughout 20s. We would, if Nina was at work or something, because she would work weekends, we would like get together and like play video games and stuff on occasion. And so we don't do that anymore. I would do
that with my best friend too. My childhood best friend. We would just play, like, even recently, like, 5 years ago, right? Right before I had kids. that ended.
It is the end of it, unfortunately.
We both had kids, so it's you know, it is what it is.
But he was, I guess he was out at the Sonic the Hedgehog movie, and one of our fans who was working security at, I think, the Dartmouth Mall, I think that's true. He recognized Keith and was like, Keith from Red Cow. And which is very funny to me because Keith is not like prepared for that moment.
it is funny. Like we take on the mantle of content. So if we right. get noticed, we're prepared for it. We're used to it in some respects. I've never been recognized. Somebody mistook me for Vsauce once. That's
oh wow.
That's the only thing. He's got less hair than I do.
I think because we own the channel, we would, we both feel it an obligation to rep the brand. Kind of everything is meant to advance the mission of the channel. Especially when you dedicate this much time and energy and love into what you're doing, you stop and talk to the person for a couple minutes, to learn like how'd you find the channel or whatever. But Keith obviously doesn't have, he's as a friend and a guest. And so he's so supposedly he was just like, my, and just like, wasn't able to. And then he starts texting me and he's like, please tell your friend that, I was with kids and that's otherwise I would have stopped to talk to him. Please apologize to him. I was like, I don't think he's my friend. He's like a fan.
I wouldn't even be able to, I don't know who he is. unless he like comments on Reddit being like, oh yeah, I saw Keith.
Yeah.
We would never be able to communicate with this individual.
Exactly. So, so I got my boiler and going back to being a dumb, smart person, I had it in my head of like, oh, no hot water. But everything else is intact. It's like, you can't really live without electricity. I mean, you can, but you really, really don't want to. If the water was turned off, that would be kind of disastrous. But in my head, I'm going like, oh, just the heat part of the water is the problem. Like I probably won't linger in the shower, but I can, I'm a man. I can take a cold shower. I don't know what temperature that shower water was. If it was 35, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Because it comes out of the ground. It's much colder than you think it is.
Yeah.
And have you ever been in cold water that panicked you?
Oh, yeah. I was a swimmer, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've been in lots of cold water situations, but yeah, or like there was like, we would swim in the winter, so you'd swim, you'd be going from like the 0 degree weather into a swimming pool. And then you'd go outside and you'd still be dripping wet. So your hair would freeze like icicles on top of your head.
Yeah. I mean, you step in, you're like, ooh, I'm cold, but I'll warm up. Cause like I've been like at the ocean and it's like cold and you get it, it's like maybe like 50 degree, 55 degree water. It's real cold, but like you kind of just do it and it's not like the 35 degree water is not like that. This is like, if you stick your head in it, you'll get a headache. Like the moment you stick your head in it.
I also, cause we would just go swimming at the Cape, at the beginning of the season, which is like the water is so cold. It's like, basically it's still like thawing out from the winter. And yeah, it is. It's like, it is shot. Like the breath, like the breath comes out of you. It's crazy. Yeah,
it's crazy. So then I'm like faced with this decision of like, well, I can't use soap and wet my entire body. So I've just got to focus on what's important here, which is the hair. I can't like for 2 days go with like unwashed hair. I just refuse. And so I stick my head in the freezing cold shower and like, you got to wait until the hair is actually wet, And you're just like, oh God, it's terrible. And then you put in the shampoo and you got to do it again. And it's like, you can get through the first one. Getting through like the second one was so miserable. And I actually did have like a panic moment the second time, not a serious panic moment, but a moment where I was like, oh, imagine dying in cold water. Imagine, there's one like drowning is one of those really scary thoughts, drowning for fuck's sake, where you just can't get out. You just can't get that that gasp of air that you need, and you just sit there and die.
It's like the Sonic music plays.
But I was like, but imagine, like, you know, there obviously the Titanic comes to mind, people in horrible situations in war comes to mind, impoverished people or shit, you know, countries that that don't have hot water. It's just like all of a sudden, EJ, I had all this perspective where I was like, holy shit, hot water matters. It's so luxury, important, man. And
it's a luxury.
I mean, yeah, and it's a miracle too. I mean, it's not as though the hot water comes easy. They had to come in here and install a very expensive, very fancy machine to make it happen, and you have to fuel that thing on some cadence. And so it's like, you know, we all whine and complain about an awful lot of things, but like hot, like I just think every morning you should wake up and, like, you know, thank the sky or something for your hot water. And I Googled it. I said, how long would it take me to die in this water? And it's like a half hour. Like if you were in there for a half hour, you'd die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, your body temperature is like 98.6 or something. Yeah. And your body's trying to keep that warmth up.
Yeah.
You must burn more calories if you're in cold water.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. There's a whole thing about this. There's, is it Ray Cronice or say, there's a dietitian wacko. I think he helped Penn Jillette with his big diet thing, but it was like, do these like ice baths and stuff. Ice bath, fuck you. I'm never going in an ice bath ever. I lost a lot of weight and there was no ice bath involved.
No, it's all these temperature gimmicks like hot yoga and like this stuff. I'm like, no, it's hard enough for me to do this at like a normal temperature.
Just do it at the normal temperature. My God. But it's good. It's great. I mean, it's awesome because all of that shit in the hallway is all cleaned up. The oil tank, there's a gigantic oil tank in my basement, gone. We had a chimney. We don't need a chimney anymore. It vents through the, you know, this new vent pipe outside. And it's, it was really, really, it was really cool. It's a lot of money. But the thing is like we have a small house and we paid it off a couple of years ago. So you can kind of like spring for these little like major house improvements. I was watching the Undertaker's retirement or his Hall of Fame speech around WrestleMania, and he was talking about like his dad when he was little being like, "You paying your taxes?" He's like, "Yeah, Dad, I'm paying my taxes." And he goes, "You living beneath your means?" He goes, "Yeah, Dad, I'm living beneath my means." And then he said something like, "'Cause all those toes you step on the way up, those are attached to the same asses you're going to have to kiss on your way back down." But I just like this idea of a stern dad being like, you living beneath your means. That's a good lesson. Like,
to yeah, I think so.
Live
I think
beneath
so.
Your means.
I'm glad everything's working out for you in that realm. I was having such a terrible time with my microwave.
Oh no.
Like, it's a simple thing. Like, it's an over-the-range microwave. It stopped. My old one stopped working. It came with the house, and yep, it was kind of ratty. Like, the lights underneath were broken. But it eventually just stopped cooking food. Like, you just put stuff in. It would make all the noises a normal microwave makes, and then you just open up, it would just be ice cold in there.
Oh, shit.
You know, and then I looked it up on like how to fix a microwave, and there was like way too much like, I don't know, like electrical work. And
I don't think I've ever spent more than $80 on a microwave before.
Yeah. This is like an over the range. So they're like 300, 400.
Okay. Yeah.
Mine's huge. So it's like, I just went to Home Depot. I just looked up like the exact kind of microwave I had, because I was like, I didn't want to like get new, like I wanted it to fit on the same like mount that this one was on. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, maybe the same brand, the same like size, everything. Maybe that'll be good. So I just order it from Home Depot, and then they have the things where it's like, oh, do you want us to like take away your old one? I'm like, yes. And you pay a little bit more for that. It's like, do you want us to just like unpack it and install it? And I was like, I got kids. I don't have time. Yes. So I just click all that shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then they call you and they're like, hey, when do you want this delivered? I was like, okay, we can deliver it this day. And it, like you said, working from home is great because you know, you can take all of these things.
So do you get a bunch of work from home time now?
I still, it's pretty, hybridized and I can do basically whatever I want.
That's great.
But I do come in cause I actually have to film stuff now at work.
Yeah.
And it's been great. I love filming and it was great to film Box Mac recently. Mm. And, cause all like, you know, since the pandemic, it was like only editing like Zoom calls basically, or glorified Zoom calls.
You can't do anything with it.
Yeah. It's like for 2 years. So you just like want to kill yourself.
You can't even do comical digital Zoom punch-ins on people because it's not YouTube.
Well, I mean, I do use Riverside. I do use Riverside in my old job, and I use something called OpenReel, which kind of sucks, but it's it's similar, a similar concept.
Yep.
No offense to my employers who bought it, but and then so anyway, it's great working from home. You just get these things done. The guys deliver the microwave. They start unpacking it, and they notice a huge like gash in the side of the microwave. And they're like, we should just like, take this back, because if you install it and it doesn't work, that would suck. I'm like, that makes sense. I don't want a huge gash in my new microwave. So it's like, okay. And that's like, okay, we're going to put it like a call into our people. You call Home Depot and we can get a redelivery. I'm like, okay, sure. Makes sense. So I call Home Depot and I tell them the situation. They're like, oh yeah, I see that the people put in that, it was a failed delivery or whatever. And so they, scheduled a new delivery date for the microwave. The day comes and I have to go to work that day. So I was just like, Anna, just take care of it. They're just going to come in. They're going to do the same thing they did last time. Anyway, they come, they just drop off the microwave and they leave.
Oh, man.
And Anna's like, I thought you were going to install it. And they're like, it's not in our manifest. So like somehow that the install and takeaway microwave got deleted. So I was like, oh fuck. So I had to call Home Depot and they're like, that must've been like an error on our part. Cause it got deleted in the manifest. so we'll set up a new, delivery date for you or new something. Cause the microwave was already here. And I was like, and I wanted the other one to be taken away, the old one. And so, cause it's so big and you have to like find like a place to recycle these things. I just don't want to deal with it.
Totally.
It's another errand on a weekend or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so with you.
So I call them, I reschedule again to somebody to actually install this thing. The day comes, nobody shows up. And so I'm like, what's going on? So I call them and they're like, the company that was originally going to do it, we actually like, because they like contracted local people to actually do the work for them. And it's like, we're actually changing companies. And I was like, but you scheduled something for today. What did you schedule? You told me a date to like set aside. Luckily, like I said, we're working from home, so I didn't have to take special time for this. It's like, what would you schedule? You didn't schedule anything.
It means that at some point somebody was on the phone with you and was like, oh yeah, we're totally scheduling it. And they weren't scheduling a goddamn thing.
Yeah. They just like set it for me to hang up. And, and basically they're like, I think what happened was they had one person who was their distributor or the people who like will install it. They contracted them and they were switching the contract. So apparently they could not go back to the old contractor people, but they couldn't go to the new one for some reason. For some reason, there was no way for this communication to happen.
Nope.
And they gave up. And Home Depot was like, we're just going to give you $100.
Yeah.
Like, not only you won't have to pay for all the stuff we didn't give you, we'll give you an extra $100 toward the microwave. Like,
fucking microwave.
Okay. So I had to call my father-in-law and like, because the thing is pretty heavy and unwieldy. And I had a back spasm. So I'm like, I can't.
Oh, yeah, you were saying that. Yeah, that sucks.
That's another story, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to get him over to help, you know, it took a few hours too, because it's like you had to like get the bracket, like make sure the bracket fits. You had to do measurements. Yeah. Cause there was drilling you have to do on the top because the screw holes aren't quite the same. So, you know, it's a weekend project, and it's one I wanted to use money to not do. Yeah. And I couldn't use the money to not do it.
That's the age of post-COVID, is that the services themselves are becoming less and less available. Yeah, I actually, despite things going relatively well, there was this one moment when they were supposed to come and finalize the install, and I still didn't have hot water, and I worked out that morning. So I'm like cold in my sweat, you know, and I did end up just saying, fuck it, and I took another cold shower. And I was gifted a few Christmases ago these like rice bags that you can put in the microwave and heat them up, and you can put them on your shoulders and stuff. And so I have two of them. So I heated up both of them, and I was like, came out of the shower, just like hugging microwavables. But I had they were supposed to come and finish by the morning by like 12. I had a whole afternoon of like interactions with my boss and stuff, the sorts of things, like two presentations too. The kind of thing I couldn't be like, would everybody please hold on? I need to go like take care of a personal matter that's going on in my house that I scheduled during our time, you know?
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, like they're still not here. And they were supposed to be here like at 9, and it was like 12. And so I started calling, and they were like, all right, Mr. Frame, what's your, yeah. And every time you call back, they authenticate you differently. Like sometimes they don't give a shit. Sometimes it's, you know, tell me every phone number that's on this account. So whatever, I'll jump your hoops. And then they finally, you know, like when the first 10 minutes of it is just like getting to it. And then they're like, and what time did they say that they were going to arrive? I'm like, I don't know. You fucking tell me that. Is that really not in the service order? Like what time they're supposed to come or anything? So the first guy is like, actually, Mr. Frayne, very funny. It said dispatched. So they should be calling you any minute, and they'll tell you when they're there. 2 hours goes by, and I get no phone call. I call back, and she's like, it did say dispatched 2 hours ago. That's true. And I'm like, so you know that they've been dispatched. You know that they have a phone number that they can call me at to let me know what the status is, but you have no way of contacting them to ask how things are going. And they're like, correct. I'm like, you have no communication whatsoever with your service people. Like, what is this phone number I called? What do you do?
There is some. When you're talking to Home Depot, and it's like, there is like weird disconnects everywhere.
Yeah. Operational weakness. It's kind of like nobody, it's sort of like everybody decided like, because the truth is like, if you run a service department, like service is important, right? And if you have zero service or service is breaking down just constantly, every single interaction goes badly for every single person. Yeah. Then at some point you stop having, you know, like you shy away customers and stuff. But I think that like bad service is this thing that everybody will tolerate to kind of a large extent, because they just want to get through their, they want to get through their thing. And so, yeah, if you just kind of think about it in terms of cost, I think every company, there's like a question of like, how bad is too bad? And can I be like just above too bad? Like you get a fit, you know, the truth is like those guys came many, many hours late, and there's really no consequences for the company that happened. You know, there's no, it's like there was a service agreement that day that they'd come on time and they didn't. Fuck it. You know, and like, I think that kind of thing happens all the time.
Yeah. And it started off so like promising, because I think the first group of guys came on time, and it just, the microwave was broken. it had a gash in it. No. Okay. So now I have a good, nice, good microwave, but I still have the old one in my garage, and it's taking up space, and I have to like go to a Best Buy or whatever and recycle it or whatever, just throw it into the river, whatever I end up doing.
Converted into a camera.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody recently we were talking about IT support, and you know, how it's always outsourced, and you know, it's like, just like everybody knows how comically bad IT support can be, and how comically bad the interactions can be, because often the client is equally clueless and stuff. So it's like the blind leading the blind. But he was saying, he was like, you know, he's like, I got a theory that, like, what if you were to over-engineer your IT support? You know, so if instead of hiring 1,000 people to have, like, multi-hour sessions with everyone where they never solve the problem anyway, what if you hired, like, half as many or a quarter as many, like, engineers, like, tier three engineers, and had them just, like, blow through interactions? And, you know, they're overqualified for the job, but everybody will be turned away happy. You'll resolve things very quickly. They have, like, a lot of knowledge of the back end. You know, like, could that work? And I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know. I think a phone, over the phone, like, having did the IT help desk.
Yeah.
And being an engineer.
Right.
It's still difficult to guide people on the phone because you're just trying to visualize what they're seeing. You're trying to, like,
oh, yeah. The uncommon times where I have to help, like, actually, you know, because it's not my job to do, like, help desk, but because I'm higher up, it's inevitable that somebody calls me and says, like, hey, like, I got a meeting in 5 minutes. Like, I know you know how to do this. Just, like, tell, you know, that sort of thing happens to me a lot. And I really never try to be like, okay, do you see an apple? You know, I'm always like, we're getting on a Zoom and you're sharing your screen.
Yeah,
and we're not doing it any other way.
Yeah. It's like, I think one time, like, somebody, like my wife or something, gave me the phone. It was her grandmother, like, trying to, like, open an email. And I was like, why are you giving it to me? It's like, you're the IT guy. I'm like, and she's like, I can't find my email. It's like, where are you? What are you doing? It's like, I just can't see it. Just like they don't know how to be helpful.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's great.
Oh yeah. There was somebody I was helping the other day that was just like, they wouldn't stop blabbing. That's really what it was. I knew what we needed to do. We needed to get a file open and I needed to just see one thing about it. And it was just like, it was a matter of getting that fucking file open. And you know, and there were no other questions in my mind, but she was just filling in all of the emotion, all of the awkwardness, all of the, like, fretting. She just wouldn't stop speaking. And so, like, every time she would, like, kind of, like, ramp up again, I just stopped for a good long while and waited for it to be over. And then was like, all right, do you see the apple? I don't know any of the shit you said, but, you know.
Which browser are you using?
All right, so there's this thing called Google Chrome. Click it.
Click that one.
But it's, you know, I'll say this though. Since COVID, since work from home, since doing so much work virtually, I'm not going to go as far as to say that I find that people are getting more technically savvy. I think that's a consequence of time. Like, the average person I work with now has a better starting place for tech than the people I worked with 10 years ago, for sure. You know, like, 10 years ago, they were, you know, today's 80-year-olds were 70. And you know, so it just kind of, people are aging out and spending more time with the technology on a day-to-day basis. Although I still find that there's, like, if you've ever, in your workplace, you ever look over somebody's shoulder and watch them work and you're like, oh no, I don't know how you're productive. You need someone to shadow you. You need somebody to shadow you for, like, one straight week. Like, some, like, highly effective, productive person who just, like, slaps your hand every time you do a stupid thing and, like, like, screams at you and says, like, no, it's use the shortcut. But I'll say that I've been finding that people are more change resilient. They're more like, it used to be if we announced a major change, they would be like, well, this just ruins my whole life and I'm going to make it.
That's so true.
They'll run with it a bit more now.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah. Especially because, like, yeah, I work for a bigger company. So it's just arbitrary changes happen all the time. And so I think people are just, yeah, they're really I wouldn't say they're good at it, but they expect it and they'll deal with it more.
Their expectations have been set. And, you know, things like iOS updating all the time and cloud applications having UI changes, you know, once every year or something, that helps a lot because that just kind of, like, you know, culturalizes the idea that your technology is going to change on you. Whereas like the people who spent 20 years with the same Microsoft Outlook interface, they're like, I've memorized these clicks and this is how I work.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Excel spreadsheets and things like that, or legacy software. Like my mother-in-law, she worked for a company and they were like using the same like software that was like out of print for like 30 years. You know, it's like, because it was like the only software that did a certain function.
It's like Metal Jesus's XP machines. Way off the internet.
And they just, exactly. XP, definitely. And they just recently, like, I don't know, upgraded to a different cloud system. And she's like, I guess I have to retire now.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that's real. Like, you know, I've been working in tech long enough to, like, when major system changes come along, there's some percentage of people who are like, not for me.
It's like, when you get up to that, like, 70-ish or 65-70-ish, it's like, I guess I just have to stop because I can't, I physically can't learn it.
Yeah, yeah, that day comes. It's another reason to save. Because you should acknowledge that your day will come where you're like, I can't. My mom is retiring in, like, June. This is it for my mom. I think she was saying that if she holds out another 2 years, she gets this much more. So, but she's just like, I can't. Like, she's bailing.
Yeah. My parents are both retired, and I think my dad was like, they offered him like a ton of money. He was already like retired and getting his pension, and they were like, please come back for like one more year. We'll pay you like a buttload of money. And he was just like, I can't.
Yeah. There's at some point a life question about like, no, it's time for me to live life actually. And that's a good segue into something I wanted to talk about. Yes, that's the topic, bailing out. When do you bail out? So we got one of these kind of typical comments that we sometimes get, how come I don't have Box Mac on the same schedule that I used to have it on, that sort of thing. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm triggered by this kind of thing. And you know, because we had some on fire years there prior to kids, and even when our kids were infants, where it was just a content deluge. And and comparing those stats to today's stats, it's like, you know, committing as hard as we did was really fun to that particular content for that amount of time, but it didn't really make the most business sense. Sometimes like really committing to one thing is a really good idea, and other times it kind of like traps you. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit was, and of course this relates to Mr. Rolf and stuff, but so Nina, she's not like me in this way. I wouldn't characterize her as a quitter, not at all. But she says that she really loves quitting. she loves bailing. She loves like the freedom, the liberty that you feel when like something was scheduled and you just, you know, for Saturday, and like Friday night you call and you go like, I'm not coming.
I think that gives me a little anxiety.
It gives me anxiety. It makes me more feel like, no, I said I was coming and I'm coming. Like,
yeah, I'm very much like that. Like I get relief when I've completed the task and put in the work.
We're the same in that way.
It's like graduation day where you did all the work to get there.
Nobody can take it from you. Nobody can say like, yeah, totally. And of course I've been on the receiving end of somebody who bails on you and you're just like, yes. How could you do that? You know, I remember that we had that one, 4th of July shoot that one year. It was the 2017 one where we had like three people that just all bailed on the same day. It was like,
that was crazy. It was like it was an avalanche of bailing.
Yeah. Just. You know, and you start to realize, like, they never meant to come. They really said that they would, and always in the back of their mind, they figured, like, well, there'll be enough people there. It's fine, you know?
It's like, and some of them didn't even do the Nina call they called the previous day.
Then you start texting them, being like, so, we'd like to start shooting. Are you coming? You know, and they're like, where is it again? You know?
No.
But there have been times in my life where, so normally my instinct is to see it through, no matter what. But there have been times in my life where I've like really sat with it and I've really been like, why wouldn't I quit? This is like, this is the right time to quit, man. You know? And I think that that can be just as healthy, frankly.
Yeah,
you know,
I think it is. There is like a, what, the sunk cost fallacy or yes, whatever. Where
exactly. Or you had it recently with like, you had two jobs and they had pros and cons and you kind of like ultimately, you almost had to like take a day off for yourself and think about it and be like, I'm going to do the thing that makes sense for me.
Yeah. No, it is like, oh yeah, that was probably one of the hardest decisions ever. Cause it's just like, you know, it's like you said, you don't want to like let people down, you know, right. You don't want to, especially when you're doing good, productive work, right. But sometimes you just gotta do it. You gotta look yourself in the mirror and do it.
Well, for some people it comes very easily. for us, it doesn't. It's so foolish to, like it sticks with me. But I remember when I played Little League basketball, I played from third grade to what was supposed to have been eighth grade. And then if you get past eighth grade, you know, you're in high school now and you go on to do, you know, non-Little League or something. And it was never, I didn't like basketball. I wasn't good at it. And I had no intention. You know, it also eats up your whole evenings. Like you're like playing games on the weekends and stuff. And like, I'm losing games and, you know, like, fuck this, you know,
yeah.
Better things to do with my life. It was also like back then in the 90s, like if you're, you know, small non-athletic kid like me, you get bullied, you know, like
yeah,
people treating me unwell. And
I was very unathletic, so the only sport that I was like medium at was swimming. So my dad would sign me up for soccer, baseball, everything.
Yeah.
And I was horrible at everything. It was embarrassing. Like it didn't matter how much I practiced, it was just like I couldn't even get to a medium level with most sports.
Yeah.
But it was hard because my dad never wanted me to quit. So it's like every time I had to broach the subject of quitting a sport, it was just like this whole ordeal.
It was like that for me too. I think their principle on it was like, if you signed up, you got to see the season through it. And then like between seasons, you can make a decision to, you know, to pull out. But like, if you signed, like there's certainly no quitting the team. You're on the team, which is, I think a very good lesson. I would probably teach Gloria the exact same lesson. I was like, you've joined a team now. That's a different thing than deciding not to do it next year, you know? There was this stupid carrot being dangled in front of me. It's so dumb looking back on it, but it was like, if you the kids who went from third grade to eighth grade got this specialty Westport basketball jacket. It meant like you didn't quit. It was like the "you didn't quit" jacket.
Oh my goodness!
And yeah, and I was like, I want a "you didn't quit" jacket. Like it felt like the one thing that like I could get out of the whole thing. It was like, well, I suck and I'll never play basketball again, but I didn't quit. You know.
That reminds me of so my grandfather, Edmund James Massa the First, Senior.
Oh,
nice. He got an award for perfect attendance for, he never missed a day of school in his life.
Yeah. Like
probably even through college. Cause he just was that kind of person. And I was thinking like rewarding perfect attendance nowadays in like COVID times. I'm like, that probably, they probably got away with those awards, right?
Edmund Massa, you are a super spreader. Please. Yeah.
It's like, now they're like, if you're sick, just stay home. It's like, I don't think that's a valued concept nowadays.
It's funny because we're living in a culture of 24 hours. You can't escape your email. You know, Europe has laws about the boss can't email you after 5 and shit. Like we don't have that here.
No.
And you know, so like, you know, and it still is a virtue to overwork. And yet the culture kind of knows that we've gone too far for that and they're overcorrecting for it. So I've noticed that all the conventional wisdom now seems, you know, all the advice if one day I'm feeling bummed about my job or about the content or something, I better not say it out loud because the only advice I receive is, well, why don't you just upend your entire life and chase whatever whimsy, you know, if you're unhappy with this situation right now, just as it is, just upend it, destroy it, blow it up and do something opposite from it. And that's virtue. I'm like, no, that's not it either.
it's an extreme.
But I remember I was like, I just got to get the jacket. And I think my mom fed into that too. She was like, "Well, you're gonna get that jacket."
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. You get the jacket, you know.
And
you're gonna be somebody.
I think by the time I was in seventh grade, I only had one more year. All I had to do was one more year, and I'd have it. And I was like, I don't want to play basketball anymore. And I bailed, and it felt really good. And I was, because like this stupid thing about the jacket that was held over my head. I was like, oh, I don't even give a fuck about that. I hadn't occurred to me yet that I didn't care about the jacket in the first place. And it felt really good. It was really liberating. And I did the same thing with track, actually, where I was in track for the first couple of years of high school. And I had been in track in middle school too. So I did like 4 years of it. And by the time I got to my junior year, I was making my movie. I had my girlfriend, and I was like, you know, to join the track team means that you're running every day from like 2 to 5:30, and you got to get a ride home. And then there's meets, and the meets go to, you know, all over the, you know, Bristol County area. And so that's like long days. And I just realized there was like this giant opportunity cost with the whole thing. And I wanted to make a movie instead. And so that was a really easy decision where I think it's really easy to quit when you're like, because if I don't quit, then I'm kind of passively quitting this other thing that I want to be doing.
Yeah.
You know, there's
not
an opportunity.
Not succeeding in something else. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good way to, you know, I think quitting just to then do nothing is something worth examining. But if there's something else lined up. And I was thinking about all this because aside from the Box Mac question, which was, how come you don't make Box Macs as often anymore? And I was like, well, because you can only work on one project at a time. And often we choose to work on a different project. We're always working on a project. And sometimes it's RIP, and sometimes it's Peter Smith, and sometimes it's, you know, a special or whatever. You know, at this exact moment, it happens to be a Box Mac. But yeah, it's an opportunity cost question. And when I was thinking about that hilarious JonTron episode, Kid Nation.
Oh, yeah.
There was this, you know, for those who didn't see it, there was this reality show in like the late 2000s called Kid Nation. It was when reality show TV was just like this one-upsmanship thing of like, how exploitative can we make reality TV? And I don't know, I think they probably did it during the writer's strike too, when they were looking for ideas. And some psycho came up with an idea of like, well, what if it was Lord of the Flies, you know, the reality show? It would just be kids, and they got to survive, and let's see what if they kill each other. Yeah. And then there's a question of like, well, how moderated is it? Because it is minors. And my guess is that the behind the scenes people were trying to moderate it as little as possible, knowing that that's something that could ruin the show, but they still had to moderate it to some degree. But there's this moment. So JonTron, YouTube personality, he reviewed it. And there's this moment where he's like reacting to the video and making jokes throughout it as he does, like his format. And they go, it's that typical reality show beat where, you know, there's the kind of a bassy music, and
yeah,
you know, it's like the decision making time, and it's like, does anyone here want to leave on like day one? And this little 8-year-old boy, this cute little 8-year-old boy, goes, it's the way his hand shot up. And JonTron made fun of it. It just made me tear up laughing so hard. And then you know, again, it's like you're surrounded by media and TV personalities, and everybody's lost their soul. And, you know, everybody forgot what they're even doing. And the kid goes, he just says the most emotionally honest thing that anybody in the room has said all day. She goes, I am way too young for this. And then and he's like, so one more time, Jim, do you want to leave? And the kid goes, yep. he's never been more certain. The show wanted to milk a little bit of like, do I, don't I? And the kid's like, I'm out. He's like, I've been waiting for you to ask.
That's great. That's probably one of the best JonTrons right
there. He did the KFC one recently. It was also very funny.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Eating
that was bizarre, like conspiracy theories and stuff.
So, you know, sometimes you got to bail. I don't like it. It never feels good to bail for me, or rarely does it feel good to bail. But, yeah, it's, sometimes you got to, they were talking about that in church a little bit, like this concept of like, you know, if you're going to remake yourself or you're going to make a huge change in your life, you're going to decide to lose a ton of weight or you're going to just, you know, whatever. Like, so he's like, the pastor was saying, like, you ever like need to move something huge in your house and you have to take like 2 days off from work to do it? He's like, sometimes like in life you need to be like, wait, like stop. Is it time to quit? Yeah. Or is it time to make a big change? And I like that. So that's my, of course, everybody was who asked this question about Box Mac was very nice about it and seemed to understand it. But do they want us to suffer? That's the question. And yeah, it does, it brings up all this, you know, it, do I feel guilty making fun of Mr. Rolf for all of his no time, too busy, my kids, et cetera. And it's like, well, yeah, because I, with the exception of Tripods on the Ceilings, I connect with almost everything he's saying. There is a major difference. It's not anything small. It's that this is not my job. This is not.
It's true.
I squeeze this into my life. You know,
this is like the most important thing. We both have full-time jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not like you know, they ain't part-time jobs. They're real ass jobs.
There are careers.
Yeah. Like the times
that feed our families.
The times we can work on Red Cow and Red Cow remains this pretty, I still think a pretty high output. It's two fucking channels, people. you don't miss out on too much Frankie and EJ in a given week.
No, you got enough.
I'd like to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, do it. Yeah, that's a movie. It did really well.
Did it make a bunch of money?
Number one movie, yeah.
That's good news. It came off the heels of Morbius, which I did not see. I felt a little obligated to for the podcast, but I was like, sometimes in life you got to quit.
Yeah, you got to quit. Yeah. It does have that thing where the audience score is weirdly high.
High-ish, critic, like 60?
Yeah, like 70.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is just probably it. And so if you watched it, it'd probably just be boring and it would just be a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I can barely stand Moon Knight and I hear that that's like premium.
Yeah. Moon Knight is not good. Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
I'm not even looking forward to Wednesday. It's not even a thing.
Yeah. I don't get up early cause I have to go on site on Wednesdays. And so like Boba Fett and stuff was making me get up really early to make sure I saw it in case there was any FOMO in the office and anybody chatting about it in the office. But now I'm like, I'll see it when I fucking see it. How about that? That's another, speaking of bailing, that's another thing that'll make you feel you ever like, there's something that's hot. There's the game you're supposed to be playing. There's the movie you're supposed to be watching. And like, instead of and you actually find an hour and a half, 2 hours to do the thing that you're supposed to be doing. And you choose not to use it for that. And you do some other comfort thing. That feels good too.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you like watch like an hour of like speedrunners or something.
Yeah, just total like
total horseshit.
Total horseshit. All right, next, give it to me hard.
just like despite this like cultural like phenomenon, you're just like, nah.
I'm gonna here to finger fuck Moon Knight. So slap on that stupid fucking suit, and I'll help you watch something different. I'm Sailor X. Thank you guys for watching, and I will catch you next time.
It's a Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. I like Sailor Dex. It seems the impression of Sailor Dex is catching on. I'm seeing it pop up in Reddit comments where like, have you seen those guys impersonate Sailor Dex? That could be the next thing. Although I'm not here to bring Sailor Dex down. I'm here to bring him up.
No, bring him up. He's our idol.
That's a stretch goal. Get his ass on the podcast and personally into his goddamn face.
I'll wear a backwards cap right down to my eyebrows.
Yeah, I'll pop mine on too. I'll be like, hey, it's like me. It's you. Hand the body over to me. Give me control, Sega Lord X. Yeah, Sonic. So, I thought it was absolutely excellent. Asterisk. The thing about kids' movies or family movies yeah, maybe the better word would be, the better term would be family movies. Because anything that's made for, like, you know, 12 and under, they can cut all kinds of corners. It doesn't have to be that great. Like, if they're really not concerned with anybody over 12 enjoying it, then they can get away with all kinds of shit. And so this movie, the CG is excellent in it. The designs are excellent, you know, and we'll talk more about the design, obviously the core controversy of the designs in a second. I just feel like normally kids' movies are either trash or they're like Encanto, or they're, you know, they're like masterpieces that are up for Best Picture or something like that. You know, like, mm-hmm. they're kind of almost not for kids. They're so good.
Yeah.
And this is like a throwback. It felt like it's like in the '90s. There were, you know, obviously Sonic is a product of the '90s. Yes. Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember somebody said, like, a friend of mine was like a Sonic the Hedgehog movie starring Jim Carrey as Robotnik. This feel like, how come, why is this coming out in 2019? Why isn't this coming out in 1993? But it does that. It's like, I can bring Gloria to it. It's primarily for her, but I enjoy it too. You know, like, that's kind of but it's not for me.
It's sort of. I mean, it's definitely you see Sonic, you see Jim Carrey, you're just like, I'm going to bring my kid to this. Like, there is a little bit of, like, the elder millennial teasers in this.
It baits me in and it makes me interested, but it's still, like, the jokes are more for her than me, but they're not going to make me cringe out of my head, you know? It really is for the kid, mostly. And boy, did it work on her. Because she came out of there going, like, I love Sonic 2. And she's like, when do we get to see it again? Can we see it at home? I was like, we don't have it at home. And she's like, then let's go back to the theater. So we saw it the next day. She wouldn't rest. She was like, I got to go see that movie again. Her only complaint was that Amy Rose was not in it. She's very disappointed that Amy Rose didn't make an appearance. And she was like, well, she'll be in the next one, right? And spoilers for everybody. There's like a thing at the end that teases Shadow. And I was like, oh, Shadow's going to be in it. They'll probably start to bring in like the Sonic Adventure people. And I think like the additional CG characters really worked for this movie. And I'm sure they focus grouped extremely well. Idris Elba as Knuckles is the highlight, like, by far. They do the kind of the Drax thing, you know, like the kind of the funny dummy. The guy who's serious and takes everything literally and kind of struggles to understand your culture, but he's like kind of good at heart. He's just a little bit of a dummy. And
it's very funny. Knuckles references.
Yeah. No, there was Sonic in the first one, but no Ugandan Knuckles in this one, I'm afraid. There's a scene that Gloria.
It's probably a bit too racist to put it.
Yeah, probably. There's a joke that Gloria couldn't stop quoting where, Knuckles is reading these texts that they've intercepted between Sonic and James Marsden. And when James Marsden is typing, it shows like the dot, 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 like it does in iMessage. And it's just Knuckles going dot, 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 dot. And, you know, everybody looks at each other like, what a weirdo. It's funny.
It is funny.
And so they got the woman who plays Tails in the video games to come back as Tails. That was kind of fun.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. She was really happy. I saw an interview with her. She was like, the words have not been invented to tell you how excited I am that they decided to do that for me. And then Sonic is played by Ben Schwartz, who also plays Huey on the excellent DuckTales cartoon. Also blue, also small. Kind of strange.
You know, I kind of like, besides, you know, Idris Elba is obviously a big name actor. I like it when the stars of cartoons are not just like,
yeah, big celebrity,
like what the Mario movie's doing.
Yeah,
brings a little bit of a red flag. But I just like it when you actually have like voice actors doing something.
I'm with you. Well, you know, and Kanto, with the exception of like John Leguizamo, speaking of the Mario movie, with the exception of John, yeah, it all comes around. with the exception of him, like the people that were in that aren't super duper famous. They're not huge marquee names, but Lin-Manuel is. And so I think Disney is kind of starting to be a little bit like Marvel, where the IP or the musician or there's some other thing that's the star power, not necessarily the voice cast, which is good. Cause I don't think like dogs voiced by John Travolta, you know, should be the thing that brings you to the movie in the first place.
At that same time, Jim Carrey and me is in there for a reason.
Well, he is wonderful.
I love that he's like, he seems like he's just put himself into that role, like really, what do you call it? Committed to it.
Yeah, he's making all the same choices you would expect him to make in like Liar Liar, like, which is a very fucking funny movie. But like,
oh yeah,
his acting choices in Liar Liar are so insane. But no, he's good. And he I was thinking about it. I was like, if Robotnik was going to be a big part of a Sonic movie, isn't this the best of all scenarios? Like, get a big comic actor and tell him to have fucking fun because you're playing a guy named Eggman. for some reason, even though they gave him the goggles, they gave him the stash, they shaved his head, for some reason they didn't make him fat. And Jim Carrey even said that he wishes that he had been fat because then he could kind of like be even more physical with it and he could hide his own body imperfections. And but yeah, they didn't want to do that for some reason. Now he's I don't think they could have done better than Jim Carrey. Like, I can't think of a better option for that character at this point now. And yeah, when they first cast him, I was like, Jim Carrey, really? It was like, no, yeah, just let him be the Riddler. You know, why not?
I know. Just let him have him go nuts.
And I think one of the best things about both of these movies is this Ben Schwartz guy who plays Sonic and the way Sonic's written. They innovated Sonic in a way I didn't think they could pull off. And not only did it work, but like it may make the character last another 30 years, 50 years, you know, which is because this 90s attitude thing had a shelf life. And
yeah,
I think they struggled with it, you know, even like doing like animes of it can be kind of, you know, he ends up not being the main character all the time because he's kind of like a dick in a lot of the shows. I think Jaleel White did something kind of fun with it, but even he was still, it was just Chili Dogs and Wisecracks. He was Bugs Bunny. You know, yeah. Like in those cartoons, he was just Bugs Bunny. And in this one, he's not a teen. He's a kid. He's like decidedly a kid. And that makes him a little bit more innocent and like harmable. Like he you don't want to see him in harm's way quite as much. So that makes you kind of connect to him emotionally. And then they also, like in the first one, he's lonely. And I remember being like, Sonic is lonely. Like, this is what we're going to do. And it ends up dovetailing very nicely into this one because he ends up getting a crew. He ends up getting Knuckles and Tails, and they kind of stick the landing on that story of like, here's what he needed. He needed some bros. Mm-hmm. It kind of works. And so there are moments where Sonic is sad and he actually shows some vulnerability and he expresses sadness. Like I don't think I ever saw Sonic express sadness. So now he's kind of like, it's like they took the premise of the character, which is this Bugs Bunny wisecracking thing. And they just put just a drop of vulnerability in it, just a drop of cuteness into it. And that's like just what it needed. Really masterful stuff when you consider like how easily you could have fucked that up.
No, yeah.
And made it really cringy. I mean, just the fact that original design exists shows like, here's how, you know, on the wrong path they could have been.
And the fact that they took the time to fix it meant they thought they had something, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah.
They took the time to fix it and listen. And
I think so too. I've wondered that often. I'm like, did they have a shittier movie as well? And then they decided, then they doubled down and fixed it. Or did they actually have the movie we saw, just a bad design for some reason? That they say the latter. They're like, no, we believed in this movie. We just went a little too far with the design because we thought he needed to fit in with the real world or whatever. And we thought it'd be weird if we made him a cartoon. Then we said, fuck it, let's make him a cartoon.
You might as well.
And I remember feeling kind of like, in the first one, like Robotnik doesn't look like Robotnik. And he spends a lot of time talking to James Marsden. And I'm like, is this really what a Sonic movie is per se? It kind of felt like they've started with a different movie and then kind of like backed into a Sonic movie. Ultimately, this movie, it doesn't feel that way at all. It feels very much like a Sonic movie. Now there's like a Labyrinth Zone scene. There's this Master Emerald thing. Knuckles is great. And they obviously innovated him really well. But, But they also pay off everything that happened in the first movie. Like, the first movie ends up making sense with this. So if you watched it back to back, it would feel totally cohesive. And all of the characters track, including the human characters. Again, the humor's fine. There's only really one complaint I have with the movie, and I'm not even sure how big it is because my kid liked it. There's a section where we're looking at the humans. They spend a little too much time with the humans, and I'm not quite sure, like, what the, like, why are you showing me this? Why is there's this whole thing at a wedding that goes on. And, but anyway, it's hard for me to imagine them doing a better job. I wouldn't have made, you know, sometimes I'll see a movie, I'll see Power Rangers or something. I would have done way better. I see this. I'm like, I don't think I would have done better. I don't think I would have done even close to this good. This is really, they really hired the right director. I don't know him from anything else, but this dude had like a vision for a Sonic the Hedgehog movie and he nailed it.
That's great. That's awesome. Yeah. I am very, very afraid for the Mario movie.
Yeah, Gloria was like, she's like, Mario has the better games and Sonic has the better movies. That was what she came out saying.
Yeah, it's insightful. I would have thought they would be able to like come out with some sort of game to like coincide with this release of the film, but
yeah, well, say the Sonic team doesn't seem to make very good stuff. If they could do Sonic Mania games, because you just make Sonic Mania games all day, right? Like,
just make Sonic Mania 2 and be done with it. Just keep going.
Stop fucking with me. Make Sonic Mania 2 and then make more of these movies, and you'll have a great. Like, you'll really improve the quality of that IP. They already have. The movie alone is great for the IP. And yeah, it really makes you think, like, this Chris Pratt thing.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll be good. Maybe.
We haven't seen a frame of it yet, so who knows, but
the Chris Prattness of it all.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had, like, a full, like, I know Bowser's Fury came out last year, but we haven't had, like, you know, the big premium Mario, like, Odyssey-type game. In 2017. Like 5 years, 6 years. So.
Yeah, 2017.
So it's been a while. I was thinking, like, are they gonna like show the movie and maybe announce a new game too? I think that would be. I'm obsessed with that idea.
Yeah, this I like it too. Like the cross promotional type thing.
Yeah, it just feels great. Well, let's. I think. Always liked it.
Well, let's think. What it was. I think Mario Brothers 1 was 1985. Mario 2 was somewhere in there.
It's like 88 or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 3 was 89.
Three was either 89 or 90.
Or 90.
I think it was 89 in Japan, 90 in America or something.
Yeah. Like Mario World was what, 92, 93?
Yeah, 91.
Oh, wow.
90, yeah, 91.
So it like came out right, okay, yeah. And then 64 was 96.
Yeah.
And then Sunshine was 2002.
Yeah.
So 6 years. And then Galaxy was 07. So 5 years.
Yeah.
Galaxy 2 was 12. No, not at all.
2010.
So only three, but that makes sense.
But it was the same engine. It was a little, yeah.
And then 3D World was 2013. And then Odyssey was 2017. So, yeah, they've never gone longer than 6 years. And here they are, like, 7 years.
Yeah, or five, or wait, 2017.
Oh, never mind, 5 years.
Just 5 years, 5 years. And five same years. Thing with, yeah.
Yeah, oh, so they could go another year or two, but it's going to be time pretty soon.
Yeah. But Bowser's Fury was great. It was just, it did feel like a demo.
Maybe Bowser's Fury is their way of being like, it's like when we put out, like, half-assed content on a Sunday to be like, give me, like, a little more time to edit. I'm not on my usual.
So they delayed like Breath of the Wild 2. So they're like they'll probably release a port of Wind Waker or something.
When I hear that people are mad about, you know, Breath of the Wild 2 getting delayed, I'm always like, really? They're making Breath of the Wild 2. Like it's gonna. My guess is. I mean, how big was that first game? You're gonna be pissed that it's delayed. Like,
I think generally that it's been positive vibes on the delay. It's like because people know what a game that's not delayed looks like.
Exactly. That's what we need. We need from people is like you know what a game do you really want them rushing something like to market?
That Cyberpunk 2077 had an awful launch. It was buggy.
Yeah.
And I think they did end up fixing it, like, with patches, but the initial press of the release was so bad, I think it just doomed it for eternity.
Yeah. And how do you patch, like, a very buggy, like, you know, a game that hasn't been play tested that's that big, like, you're going to have to play test the hell out of it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so you got to get everything right. Yeah.
I'll say one last thing about Sonic. The there was a promotional poster that was modeled after the original Sonic 2 poster, the iconic Sonic 2 poster, the big 2.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, these fuckers, man. They know how to get me. They got me.
Yeah, I mean, Sonic 2 was, that was the first Sonic I played. It was on the Genesis.
Same with me. I loved it.
It was, yeah. So that box art is iconic, and yeah.
I just played through I had picked it up many times, but I never like played the 8-bit Sonic the Hedgehog, the Master System / Game Gear one. I always prefer the Master System releases for those because they're higher resolution. The Game Gear one's basically zoomed in so they could make the sprite big, and it
makes they're it almost the Sonic 2 on the Game Gear is almost unplayable because there's so many like leaps of faith and stuff, and
you don't want that.
It just, you can't really figure out what's going on.
It's totally different. It's same thing with the Illusion games that I always talk about. You want the Master System versions of these games, but it was really good. There's problems. I prefer the 16-bit, of course, but I was like, you know what? You know, an NES Sonic, it's damn good. Like, it's really, in a way, like, I can't get over the fact that it's not talked about more often. It's like, they're full-blown Sonic games on hardware that people are very, you know, the kind of hardware people are very nostalgic for that came out during the golden era of Sonic, and yet they're kind of like second-class citizens, or they're kind of like D-makes or something.
People didn't even realize they existed, basically.
Yeah, well, because, like, Sega had this really smart idea of, like, okay, let's do a handheld, but let's basically just make it a handheld version of one of our existing hardwares, unlike Game Boy, which, it's not just a handheld NES, it's lower than that, you know?
Mm-hmm. They reused calculator tech to make it.
Yeah. So they had this really cool idea of like, and then when we develop a game, we can release it for Master System in Brazil or wherever
people. Yeah, exactly.
And we can release it for the handheld. And yet, even with like, they probably figured they're like, that'll be good marketing because everybody will be able to understand that concept. And yet, I think that concept went above a lot of people's heads. I think like in North America, we mostly knew Game Gear pretty well, and we really didn't know Master System super well.
No, yeah. I remember finding a Master System in, like, a church basement, like because there was, like, a youth group, and they had, like, a box of, like, stuff, I don't know. And I remember seeing the Master System, because it has kind of, like, it's like a bizarro NES. So it's got, like, kind of, like, a square, like, D-pad, and it's
instead really of A weird. And B, it's 1 and 2?
Yeah, so it was like, what? I didn't even, because I knew Atari, I knew NES, and then I saw this, I was like, what even is this?
Yeah.
It's like red and black.
It's, you know, this emulation stuff, it really wakes you up to everything. I actually bought, you know, because I have an NES set up upstairs for the Zapper stuff, if I come across a good deal on an NES game, it's fun to pop it in, I admit, and play on the CRT TV. And, so I grabbed DuckTales. It was $20. And I was like, you know what? It's a top 20 game.
Oh, yeah. I came really close to buying, like, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out when I went to, like, the mall, and there was, like, a used game store there. And I actually might do a video about that store just because it's, you know, content. But, And I didn't, and I kind of regret it. And it's probably going to be gone when I go back. Because Mike Tyson's Punch-Out isn't on, like, the virtual console or anything or whatever.
Oh, yeah, okay.
It's Punch-Out, you know? It's Punch-Out.
I'm, like, of two minds, because when I sit down with that NES controller and that original hardware, the original CRT, I have this moment where I'm like, this totally does feel different. This feels like the real-ass thing. And then about 30 seconds later, I'm just playing the game like I do on any emulator, and I'm completely disconnected.
You fuzz out, and
yeah. So, in a weird way, it kind of like oscillates. It like reconnecting with the hardware kind of makes me go, oh, and now I'm excited to like go try to play some games, you know, that I haven't tried yet on the emulators. I was trying to play Batman Return of the Joker the other day. I just ended up doing it with cheats just to kind of like get a feel for the game. And I was like, this game blows. I mean, the first one was so good, and it's the same developer. I mean, Sunsoft, but there's something, I don't know. It almost feels like it was modeled after a different game or something. It's not good at all. Easter's coming up.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to Washington, D.C. on Wednesday through Friday. That's why we're recording this a little bit early. I'm going on a family vacation with Nina's family.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what's happening. So
I wasn't sure if it was like a work thing or whatever.
Oh yeah. No, so her mom and her stepdad, they have, you know, at this point they have grandkids on both sides. There's heroes on both sides. Very fine people on both sides too. How come that joke hasn't been made more? Like Trump reading the Star Wars crawl.
There's got to be an AI voice that does that. Very fine people.
They've got that old person thing, you know, of like, let's get everybody from both sides of the family in the same room, but none of us know each other. But we're going to go, and I've never been to DC. Everybody's really, I'm starting to feel kind of embarrassed, DJ, because everybody's like, you've never been? I'm like, look, there's a lot of places on this planet. I don't know what to tell you. There's some of them I haven't been to. There's some movies I haven't seen too, just a few.
I don't know. DC's a dump.
Yeah, I keep hearing, it's funny because like, on one hand, I can clearly see it's a dump. And on the other hand, people are like, oh, like the cherry blossoms will be in bloom on the National Mall. Like, is it really? I guess I'll see. I'll come back and I'll report to you. But in honor of Easter coming up, so there was an announcement that Mel Gibson is making another Passion of the Christ movie, like a Passion of the Christ anthology film or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw that. I wasn't sure if it was real or not, but
yeah, it is. I can't remember what they called the thing Jesus is 3 days dead.
Resurrected. Wait,
no, it's like this thing here. Let me look it up. it's a specific religious term. New Mel Gibson passion movie. No, this is real. The movie is called Resurrection, yes. The Passion of the Christ Resurrection. I wonder if the guy's going to come back, you know, the dude, Jim Caviezel.
Was he Jesus?
He played Jesus, yeah.
Is he going to be 20 years older? Like, the resurrection was really hard on Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was a tough couple of days.
Being dead really ages a guy.
What should moviegoers expect? Cinema is unique in its ability to bring. Yes, yes, yes. My God, you ever see? You read these articles, and they just want you to scroll so you see the ads. And so there's like seven paragraphs that just recap the most basic information.
The Passion was a experience. I was in high school when that came out. You remember the same age?
Yeah.
But so I went to a Catholic school, so they actually did a field trip to that movie. And yeah, so it was just so weird because like I got out of school to like, I don't know, just see like this torture porn.
Yeah, well, I saw it awkwardly with Keith and with Alan, and I don't know why. It was three bros went to go see, you know, Jesus get ripped to shreds. And I mean, you know, it's a rough movie. And, you know, it's all subtitles. I mean, it is just the opposite of Spider-Man, is my point. And I remember there was a dad and his son a row ahead of us. And when there's kind of like the big moment where he's going to die, they got on their knees in the theater. And I was like, at the time, I thought it was really funny because I was like, we're not going to turn this yucky, you know, sticky theater into our church, are we? I mean, like, I literally have Reese's Pieces in my hand, like, watching it. I mean, it's just not the time and place, but it makes a lot more sense to screen it for, you know, like Catholic schools or for mega churches or something like that. But, you know, especially now as I go to church and I'm kind of like, well, you know, this is they're like, this is their big thing, man. Like you can't depict that. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, that's kind of a bummer if like the whole religion is based on like just wrecking this guy. then, but I've come to learn. I'm like, yeah, the whole religion's based on wrecking this guy. You know, like it's
he
all
wrecked him. He wrecked himself for us. That's the story, right?
Yeah. In other words, you could say that Mel Gibson's treatment of it was not biblical, or it was exploitative of the concept of the blood of the Savior or something like that. But it's like, no, it really how brutal it was is sort of the point. And so he kind of did nail it. No pun intended.
I'm interested. I'm interested out of the gate what this movie's going
to
be.
So it's supposed to be
I liked Apocalypto. So
which is also weird and brutal. It focuses on the events that occurred. I didn't know there were events that occurred. 3 days between the crucifixion of Jesus Christ and his resurrection. There's some biblical term for that. I can't remember it. Somebody will tell me. I was thinking too, I was like, you know what would have been a cool way to do the Passion in the first place is what if you like basically just did the Passion as he did, you know, unchanged, but what if you like cut away from it to modern day, some modern story about like an ordinary person going through a cancer diagnosis, or like, what if you like intercut, you know, the Easter story with real people and, you know, addiction, or it might be interesting to like juxtapose, you know, this event is connected to this event or something like that. I don't know. So I feel like there was room to be more artful other than just being like, here's the Romans. But I'm definitely open to whatever crazy thing he has in store for us. My only question is, I mean, how the fuck is Mel Gibson not permanently canceled?
I don't know. He's still going to the Oscars and all that. And
yeah, you might say like, oh no, he can find funding to do like a religious movie because those are the people who support him. Fair enough. No, when they cut away to the Chris Rock slap, there's The Rock, there's who, you know, whatever. There's fucking Mel Gibson. He's like, oh, this is bad for his career. It's so ridiculous. At some point, I got to wonder, like, does this guy own?
He's got some dirt on everything.
Does he own MGM or something? Because they're not, this is not a forgiving bunch. they're not like, come on.
He knows
back
where
in.
The bodies
you're
are buried.
Enough, you know?
He knows where the bodies are buried.
Maybe.
He might have buried some bodies. Who knows?
Maybe that's it, man. And speaking of church, and speaking of family get-togethers, so I'm there yesterday, and I'm standing behind this gigantic Portuguese guy. This like, he's got a shirt on that says like "We lift big shit" or something like that. He's just got one. You know, my guess would be he's 300 pounds, but he wasn't fat at all. Just hugely muscular, like no ass. A man. Some of these muscular guys have no ass. Just an interesting detail. He's got like jeans that fall off, you know, by huge wingspan, you know, bald head. Like he lost all of his hair when he was 12 because he's like coursing with testosterone. And
so turn to Joe Rogan.
Big gorilla hands. When he applauds, it's, you know, deafening. You know, he probably had some opportunities to play football, you know, at the college level or something, just because he's just such a specimen. and I was thinking, like, I think he was like with a family member, and he like hugged him, and he gave him one of those kind of like aggressive masculine hugs, you know. So it's like very warm and very endearing, but it's he has to kind of like also rough the guy up a little bit, like to keep the masculinity intact. And I remember, do you remember as a kid, like going to like a family get together and like the men, the more masculine men would do that when they were being warm to you, they would always give you a little bit of a wrestle hug. Yeah. Or they would like, you know, and they put their hand on your shoulder. They'd kind of like hit you like a little too hard. It always kind of had the effect of being like, ow, why are you like roughing me up so much? And it kind of, you know, I haven't been treated like that by another man since I was a kid, probably. And I was kind of like, I wouldn't mind being roughed up by this dude a little bit, or like by like a
dude wouldn't mind having him hold me like a baby.
Yeah. I was like, it would be kind of nice to have like a big male relative who like roughs me up a little bit when he's
tussles your hair, but it kind of like rips out your hair a little bit too. Big
fucking noogie. And, you know, like he's kind of bullying me a little bit, but he loves the hell out of me or something.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. He feels warmth while he's giving you the noogie.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, it's tender and but hurts. Tender love, tender hurt.
You know what I mean? There's that whole thing. It's, yeah. It's kind of like, I think the reason the older male relatives do that is for an element of no homo.
Yeah. But it's like when characters loudly say they have girlfriends or something.
But in the process, it ends up also being rather affectionate and, you know, like, it's like a good display of male on male, you know, endearment or something. So I was just staring at this big Portuguese guy thinking about how I'd like for him to hoist me up and throw me around.
Just put you on his back.
And ride off
like a backpack.
Why do birds suddenly appear? Did I talk at all last time about how Gloria and I watched the Simpsons movie? I talked about it on Discord for sure. I'll just say that we love the Simpsons and we wanted to do a movie night and I was like, let's put on the Simpsons movie, and we do. And she liked it. It was good. It really isn't that bad. It's not prime Simpsons at all, where every joke, every 10 seconds are giving you gold, you know, you just can't.
I remember because the Simpsons was on the downswing and I remember being like, this movie feels like even at the time it felt like the movie came too late. And I enjoyed it. I saw it with my dad. We were both Simpsons fans.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed it, but it was, it's definitely like, it's not all winners there.
I mean, it had been on the downswing for like 8 years. Like, and that's assuming that in 1999, Simpsons was good because it came out in 07, you know?
Yeah.
So I actually remember thinking like, oh, the Simpsons blows now. And then the movie came out and it wasn't that bad. And rewatching it, I was like, yeah, there's like enough there. And the voices don't sound weird yet, like they would later. And, but there's definitely like, there are jokes in there where I'm like, that would not, I mean, I think it was PG-13 for one thing. I was like, that would not fly in a PG-13 movie. That would not fly in any rated movie at this point. One of them is, just completely forgot, they just show Bart Simpson's dick in this movie.
Yeah, because they have a huge, like, naked skateboard run, and they're, like, hiding his dick in certain ways. And then there's where everything's hidden, and it's just his dick, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get the gag. It's a funny gag, but, like, it's his dick. It's not a joke. It's not like, oh, it's a thing that looks like a dick in front of him. It's Bart Simpson's dick is in this movie.
Little cock and balls.
Yeah. And Gloria was like, is that Bart Simpson's penis? And I was like, yeah. For some reason, yes. And the other one was like just like a really like cheap gay joke. The kind that I don't think you'd see today. Where when he skates, it's the same scene. When he skateboards by Ralph, Ralph goes, I like men now. I was like, I don't think they would ever do that.
Yeah, it's very lazy. That's a very lazy joke.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like the kind that like bullies in middle school would have said, like, you like men, kid? That was the thing. Yeah, for a long time, that was in the parlance, was like, you like men. In my high school, anyway, when they would make like a gay joke at somebody, they'd say, you like men. I'm like, I do, actually. I like to be tossed around by one.
Yeah. And one I like give men. Me manly hugs. I don't love my hair.
I do like men.
I do like men.
I think that's all I got. I want to
be hurt by men. I did. So, yeah, I mentioned that I had like a muscle spasm in my back.
Mm.
Yeah. And I woke up one day and like it was at like 4 a.m. and I just like, it was like a searing pain in my back. Like just like, oh, and that's why I got up and I had to do what do you call a hunchback walk to the bathroom because I had to like pee. So I was like, oh, are they related? Like I had to pee real bad in the middle of the night and my back hurts. And so I'm like, basically panicking. I'm like, I guess I'm like, maybe my kidney's exploding. I'm going to die. I have to feed this family and they're going to be left without a father. Anyway, so like I somehow get back to sleep, and then when I wake up, I'm like, I gotta see somebody. It was like a Sunday too. Was it a Sunday?
I can't quit.
And so it was, I think it was a Sunday, but I was like, oh, I guess I can go to like a CVS, you know, minute clinic or whatever. And, cause it's like I'm like really like hobbling around, and it just like hurts really bad. I was like weirdly panicking about it. And
well, it sounds like it's very painful.
Yeah. And so, cause I didn't know if it was like what it was. Right. It could have been a kidney stone or something. So I go to a minute clinic, and the first like nurse I see, it, you know, is like, oh, it's, you know, where's it hurt? It's like, I'm like, it's like here. And like, I've like had weird like urges to pee or something. And she's like, oh, maybe it's a kidney stone. So they made me like pee in a cup. And I guess there was like, because they can test it like right away or something. Because they're like, oh, there's like a little bit of blood in your urine, but like not that much. Then another nurse like just like went and just like touched my back. And it was like, oh, you have a back, like a muscle spasm in your back right there. And I was like, oh, okay. So I don't know like why it was giving me an urge to pee. Maybe it was, I don't know how muscles work. I'm not a biologist, but and so
or why there would be blood in your.
I don't know what that is all about. I don't know what else is wrong with me, but it was like a really small. It was a small amount that they were like not really that concerned, but they were like kind of curious. But anyway, so what they that was a huge relief. It was like this weird like panic day of like, oh, I'm not young anymore. I'm going to die.
Yeah, there's a question of like, so how severe is the situation? Yeah.
So basically, all I had to do was like, they gave me muscle relaxers, which I took one of them, and it was like, it floored me. Like I was like melting. My tongue was like heavy, so I couldn't speak right. Like, and I never took another one because I was like, that's worse than the back pain. Like, I feel like people over prescribe things. Maybe that I shouldn't have gone to like a pharmacy to.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck. They'll give you
And what really all I probably need to do is do like stretches, like do one of these and touch my toes and do a heating pack. But they're just like, here, just take this pill and whatever. So
yeah, like, okay, it won't hurt, but like for how long and how many times should I take this particular pill?
Yeah. And like the directions were like, take three of these a day. I'm like, I'm not even taking one more of these because it's just awful.
Establish an addiction to these and call us in the morning.
That's what it feels like. It feels like it's just like, yeah, here's a bunch of pills. Your back spasm. Not only will your back spasm not hurt, you'll just melt into your couch.
You just fail your family a different way. Well, I'm glad you're okay. So how long did it take for it to stop hurting?
I mean, basically I immediately started, you know, doing like stretches and, and then the heating packs and stuff. And then like 3 days it was basically back to normal. Cause I shot Boxback like the week after.
Right.
So I was actually concerned. I was like, oh, am I going to be able to even shoot that?
We got John sick. We got EJ with a back spasm. We got Zach with his late job. It was great. It was a great shoot. It was nice. Always. It was nice to have Zach in the off season. You know, it wasn't, we got him out for a standard shoot. It was great. It was just the four of us.
I didn't expect Zach too. It was like a surprise because you were a little bit late. Cause you just did a race and I got there and Zach was there and John was there. I was like, oh,
the whole game.
All my friends.
We brought over the Super Console X and played what else but Felix the Cat.
Yeah, we played Felix. And then John wanted to play Battle Chess for some reason, and we were all kind of enthralled watching it.
Yeah, there was an NES game called Battle Chess, and John just wanted to play it. And Zach in particular, like Zach was John's wingman, and he could tell what was going to happen to John several moves before John seemed to be able to figure it out. And Zach's a smart dude. Like he's normally he knows where the ball's gonna be. You know.
Yeah. That was like, I think that was an Interplay game. Like they Interplay. They did lot of, they did like the first Fallout game or Fallout 1 and 2.
It's fun to hand John a controller and 50,000 games and like pick a game.
And, yeah, he always picks something weird.
With, yeah, you can't convince him to like play something that's action oriented or something or he's ever tried before that looks cool or like, no.
He'll play an NES port of an arcade, you know, like yeah, something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the inferior version on the NES.
Well, he doesn't really have a lot of breadth in terms of retro games. I mean, he knows the Super Nintendo very well, but he doesn't really know about most of the others. And he's not really like in a mindset where he wants to try it. So you'd either have to like really push him towards it or, but he seemed to really like Felix. He just sucked at it. He's just really, really bad at platforming for some reason. Then again, it was an Xbox 360 controller. And that's yeah. not ideal for NES.
No.
I could use the 8-bit dough, I'm sure. Yeah, actually I have one last thing. I was running today and I was I was running like a 7:16 pace, which is pretty quick for a training run. And all of a sudden at the 3.5 mile mark, I got this sharp pain in the back of my calf and, I had to stop and I'm touching it now and it's, you know, it's tender. So hopefully that'll go away. I don't like the idea that I wouldn't be able to run. That's not
good. Yeah. Yeah, that's I just had, and I have to do more stretch. I like never stretch. So the way the back spasm probably happened is like I was sitting on the futon, and like Noah was in front of me, and I picked him up from a sitting position, going up, and I got a quick like it was like a pinch in my back, but I didn't even connect it to the thing that happened the next day, like. It wasn't even a thing, but I don't know. I just like picked him up weird from a weird position. And I guess that just did a number on me.
You know, all it takes is a movement too fast. And imagine if you were 60 or 70 or 80.
Yeah. It's like when you see like a kid fall and you're just like, oh, whatever. But then when you see like an adult fall, you're like, oh my God, like, it's a huge deal. But you see, when you see kids fall all the time,
there's like two different kinds of falls. There's a fall that's like kind of goofy, and even if you feel bad for the person or they're embarrassed or even if it looked like they kind of got hurt, there's depending on the way they fall, there still might be a hint of humor in it. And then there's the ones that are not fucking funny. There's the ones that you're just like, ah. falling sucks. You ever like, yeah, there's like falling down like stairs. Obviously, that could be like, but like totally unexpected falls. That's like a certain kind of shock in life. Car accidents are like that, and I think the third category would be like spilling a drink in a public area or like around your peers or something. Big old fucking spill of a drink. Idiot. That's one of those things that will like. You ever like have like a drink spill and like 3 hours later you're still on it. You're just like, I can't fucking let that happen.
I'm pretty desensitized. I was very clumsy as a kid, so really? Spilling drinks is like
you just stumble around drunk near the middle. Like, yeah. Oh, that's me. You know how I do.
Yeah, I was born this way.
I was born legs out.
Red Cow Arcade.